Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, we have some big fights to talk about. Inoue versus Fulton looks like it's coming to the finish line. Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis, all things are looking good for that. We got Plant Benavidez. We got a big fight over on DAZN this weekend, the middleweight division with Liam Smith and Chris Eubank. Good things are happening. Let's talk about it. What is up, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of Inside Boxing Live. It is a product of John Boy Media, Dan Canobio, with the former world champion, Chris Algieri. And Chris, these are the type of episodes where I run to the microphone, where I am jacked up, because literally out of nowhere, we got a flurry of boxing news, fights that fans want to see. Really changed my thoughts on the first half schedule, which I thought was going to look good, but now it's looking like a slam dunk. The biggest news of the boxing week is Naoya Inoue and Stephen Fulton have agreed to terms on a super fight late May, early June, ESPN Plus. This came out of nowhere, but I could not be more happy because I think it is one of the best fights you could make in boxing. I'm fired up.
Yeah, I'm fired up as well. We've been speaking about this for weeks and months. And I don't know, I think for once, I think I was optimistic CA in thinking about this fight, because I did see this fight happening. And I thought that the best chance for this fight happening was right now, because anyway, he's just moving up. It's going to be his first foray into a new weight division where Fulton has been king for a while. Him going away just didn't make sense. Like, why don't I hang back for one more? Win, loser, draw, it's the biggest money he's probably going to make in the near future, possibly ever. So why leave that in the rear view when you can take it right now and potentially win? Because I do think stylistically, Fulton can provide a lot of issues for Inoue.
It's the undisputed champ at 118 pounds in Inoue, pound for pound, top three, versus the unified champ at 122, and he damn well should be undisputed. That is Stephen Fulton. He's regarded as the best at 122. The power and speed of Inoue versus the size and relentlessness of Fulton. This to me is like what boxing is all about. You know, it's like it's mm-hmm. taking chances. It's best versus best in their prime. Zero negotiations played out in the press. It was just like, yep, we have an agreement. It's a big ass fight. It's best versus best in their prime. Like, this is the fight that fight fans should get excited about. This is the anti-Spence Crawford. It's the anti some of the heavyweight games that they play. And shout out to Stephen Fulton, because he did not have to take this fight. He could have easily went to 126 with a lot of names under the PBC banner and fought Brandon Figueroa in a rematch, which many were reporting, which turned out not to be true, or many of the other guys at featherweight. But like you said, Chris, he is saying, you know what? I'm taking my career into my hands right now. This might be the best chance to beat Inoue, and I give him a pretty good shot to beat him because of his size and, like we said, his relentlessness, because I don't think Inoue has faced a fighter like Stephen Fulton, and especially not the size of Stephen Fulton. He's like, yeah, I'll go to Japan. I'll make a bag and I will fight a huge fight with a huge risk. But if I win, I'm in the top five pound for pound. And this is one of the most impressive wins if Fulton could pull it off in boxing.
Yeah, that's one thing I love about the lighter weights. It's similar to what we see with the ladies, the females. These fights happen. There's not all this gamesmanship of moving around and making this happen, and it never comes to be. These fights get made. You know, the population is so small for the guys who can actually make money. They love fighting each other, and we love that. That's what boxing is all about. But yeah, I mean, this is one of those dream matchup type fights. And I mean, if it can live up to what it is on paper, I mean, forget it. It's going to be a massive, massive fight, potentially the fight of the year type stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be on ESPN Plus. It's going to be on early in the morning, like we've seen in a way, and it's going to be in Japan. And The reason for that is just simply like Inoue is just not, he's only fought once over here in the States or twice. I think he fought many years ago and then they brought him back in 2020 in the bubble. But he's a massive draw in Japan. The fight is huge in Japan. It's going to break all sorts of gate records in Japan. Stephen Fulton, very good fighter, but not the biggest ticket seller. Like I saw some rumblings on Twitter, like, oh, this fight should be in the U.S. This fight should be in the U.S. No, no, no. This is about maximizing the dollar. This is about maximizing as much the earning potential of both these fighters. You know, this is about putting it in Japan, where Inoue is an absolute star right now. And like you said, like these young, the reason these lower weights fights happen, because it seems like the lower weights and the women too, they see the potential, or they see the moment and they go for it. You know, they seize the moment. Like this is Fulton's moment to make the most money he could possibly make. Obviously, Inoue. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it reminds me a lot of your broadcast partner here. I see a moment. I always took them my whole career, every chance I had. Listen, I was a ticket seller. I didn't have to go to Macau to fight Pacquiao. They brought it up, and I was like, yeah, you know, it's a ring. Let's fight. I went, but you got to pay me.
That's what I mean. It's like, yeah, after Provodnikov.
It's got to be a travel tax.
After Provodnikov, you could have took a hometown defense, or, you know, fought anywhere in the tri-state area. But, you know, Manny Pacquiao came around, and that's something that you hop on and you take that payday, because we've said many times in the show, it's all about getting paid. You're a prize fighter. And I think that's what Fulton saw here. He's like, you know, the PBC way is to go in-house, right? Fight a guy like Brandon Figueroa again at 126 and Mark Magsayo 126 and some of the other names.
Which are good fights. The Magsayo fight especially. I like that fight. But
yeah, Magsayo is now fighting Figueroa, which I think is an awesome fight.
Well, that's a good fight too. And again, it goes back to what we just said about these small guys fighting each other. But even back to like what you said, I mean, yeah, money's one thing, but also Stephen Fulton's there to be great. Like me, I could have fought another fight and then probably could have got a Pacquiao fight later and still made that money. But I wanted to fight the best just in case the opportunity didn't present itself again. And it seemed like with Stephen Fulton, if he didn't take this fight now, it wasn't going to happen down the line. So he's daring to be great, not on top of trying to make that extra money.
Great point. Because like I said, if he wins, I mean, he's catapulted in the top five. It's probably the best win in boxing in the last couple of years. I mean, it would be hard to find another one like that. Maybe Usyk over Joshua the first time, but no, it's not the same. Inoue is regarded as top three, maybe best fighter in the world. And you're going to go over to
one
Japan?
Of the scariest men on the planet. One of the scariest guys out there.
Cliff Rold, who is a great follow on Twitter at Rold Boxing. He does a lot of work for boxing scene. Had some fun facts on Inoue versus Fulton. Inoue will be Fulton's fourth straight foe ranked in the top 10 by the TBR board and Order the Ring magazine, and the first lineal champ Inoue has ever faced. It's Fulton's 10th undefeated opponent and fifth in his last six fights. And some more here.
Wow.
Fulton will be Inoue's third straight top 10 foe, eighth in his last 10, and the fourth division where he's facing someone ranked number one by either both of those ratings boards. So this is like the fight where you can find superlatives, you can find all different ways to describe it, and it makes sense because it's not too late. It's the daring to be great aspect for Fulton, who is the best 122 pounder. And then you got Inoue, if you think about it from his side of things, like Inoue now going for his fourth weight class, and his first fight is against the best fighter at 122. And he's undisputed at 118, won a whole slew of other titles in those lower weights. He wins this fight against Fulton. I think it solidifies any doubters that of Inoue, and it also makes him the unified champion in 122, and then he's on his way to becoming undisputed there. I mean, the stakes are ridiculous in this fight. And I do think it's going to be a good fight, too. We'll get to that in a second. Like, the stakes are high. They're huge. You can't get any bigger for this. This is the best part of boxing.
I do hope, though, that on the other end of this, no matter who wins, that these guys are catapulted into the mainstream eye. It's so difficult for these lighter weights to get recognized by people just outside of the sport, even casuals. People seem to care less about the smaller weights, unfortunately. Women used to be the same way. Now they're getting huge exposure. I just hope that either one of these guys, or both these guys really, that after this fight, I hope they put on a great show, but I hope that the world recognizes how good these guys are and that they should be headlining. They should be on major shows and that people should be talking about them other than us.
Right. I think this is like the hardcore fans, like super fight. And
yeah, exactly.
It should be a fight. It's a fight you tell your friends to watch. I mean, it'll be on. It's like 6 in the morning. That's just because the economics of it.
It's something we've talked about on probably four shows in the past, you know, six shows that we've had. But like, if I were to bring this up to my buddies at the bar, they're not gonna have any idea who these guys are, and that's unfortunate.
We know who they are, and the people that listen to the show know who they are. And I'm wearing my Big Fight Feels shirt that you can get at the John Boy shop, because these are big fights. We're gonna keep talking about Big Fight Feels. Lastly, on this Inoue Fulton fight, in terms of in the ring, Inoue, you know how good he is. Sixth in plus minus at plus 13.9. He's top three in jabs landed per round, a slew of knockouts. Then you got Fulton, who his last three fights is really impressive. You know, 70 punches per round, 40% connect rate, 22% jab connect rate. And that Leo fight really stood out to me. That's when I think he really came on the scene, is because previous to that fight, Fulton was averaging, I think it was like 14 of 50 per round, which is pretty marginal numbers for that weight class. 50 punches thrown, you know, that's not enough in that weight class. But in that Leo fight, he averaged 30 of 99. Like, he doubled his offensive output. And since that fight on, he's been like relentless. Look at that Figueroa fight. He just stood in the pocket and was willing to throw 70, 75, 80 punches around, you know, topping out at 100 and some rounds. So he's going to bring like something that Inoue has not seen. Well, on paper, we think so. Well, I don't know if Fulton will open up as much and be willing to throw 70 punches around, because Inoue will just time him. And we saw what he did to Donaire twice. We saw what he did to Maloney. We saw what he did to a lot of guys at the lower weights. Like, he is precise counterpuncher too. So that's an interesting aspect of this fight. It's like the power and the timing of Inoue versus Fulton's willing to stand and trade on the inside and kind of use his physical attributes over Inoue.
Yeah, stylistically and strategically, this is an interesting matchup. It's really going to come down to power. Really, it's going to come down to power and chin. So if Inoue can bring that vaunted power from 118 up with him to 122, while also if Fulton's chin can stand up to him, then we have a fight. And like you said, Inoue is not used to somebody who's going to throw as many punches as Fulton generally does. If he can deal with Inoue's power, or if Inoue's power comes up with him or doesn't come up with him, we have a real fight. But if Inoue's power is what it is down to 118, the more punches you throw, the more openings there are, and the more Fulton's going to get hurt, and the more he's going to shell up, and the less he's actually going to punch. And we might have Inoue looking like Inoue normally does and walking guys down, beating them the hell up. So that's really the question. I think it's going to be a great fight, because I think Fulton is big enough that he'll be able to take the shots. I think he's solid enough because he's been in with top guys. And I just think when you're coming into a new weight class, you're not truly that weight class yet. Sure, he grew out of 118, but he's not going to be a true 122-pounder when they meet in the ring. That's why I think it was smarter for Fulton to take this fight now, because in a couple fights, when Inoue is a full 122-pounder, full-fledged, just growing into the weight class, it's a whole different thing. We saw that with Bud Crawford. Bud eventually became a full-fledged welterweight once he moved up from undisputed at 140, because for a while there, he wasn't. You know, he had the power and the timing, but some of these guys were able to last a little bit. Once he got to like Kell Brook, for example, then he was a true welterweight. He's not going to Kell Brook out with a jab. That's it changes as you get used to a weight class, you become more accustomed to it. You know, and I think that when this fight's happening makes it the most competitive it can be.
Good points, Chris. I love this fight. Look for it to be finalized pretty soon and announced. And it's going to be on ESPN Plus late May, early June. Hello, my friends. The NFL action continues. We're one step closer to Super Bowl 57, divisional round in full swing. My Giants cannot be stopped. Check out DraftKings Sportsbooks, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can bet just $5 and you can get up to $200 in bonus bets instantly, plus all new and existing customers can take a shot at even bigger payout with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. All you got to do is boost your NFL winnings. What you want to do is boost your NFL winnings, right? Each leg up to 100%. I have a parlay on the books right now on the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Saquon Barkley, 2 touchdowns, and the Giants money line. I'm going to be rich after this hits. You too can be rich with the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Just go ahead, download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use code IBL. That is this show, IBL. And with that, new customers can bet $5 on the NFL divisional round, which is upcoming, and get $200 in bonus bets instantly, only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code IBL. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. Back to the show. Some other news in the boxing world. Ryan Garcia, you see this, signed the contract. De La Hoya posted it, tagged the wrong tank on Instagram. Thought that was kind of funny. A boomer moment from Oscar. But Ryan Garcia has signed his end of the deal. This contract, it said it was revised a little bit. It will be sent over to the PBC. They're all gung-ho for this fight. My Showtime sources are telling me they're very, very optimistic. All systems go. That's what they said. They're looking at April 15th, and barring something unforeseen, which is not out of the realm of possibility here, we will get Ryan Garcia versus Tank Davis April 15th.
I'm not holding my breath.
So that contract means nothing to you.
Nope. I can see this fight not happening. With all the things going on with Tank Davis outside of the ring, with his pending trials and whatever, with how erratic Ryan Garcia can be from time to time, pulling out of fights or, you know, outside of the ring troubles as well. I don't know. I think there's a lot of things that can go wrong between now and that fight happening. And I'm going to take my pessimistic CA stance on this one.
There are a lot of things outside that some fans don't want to talk about, or they get upset when we talk. Or that episode where the Tank preview episode we did, saw a few comments like, I can't believe you guys brought up Tank's legal issues. Like, that's part of the story. We didn't give opinions. I didn't say who was right and who was wrong. I literally laid out the timeline, and the fight was nearly off until it was back on. Like, there was a trial for Gervonta Davis with some serious accusations and some serious penalties if he is found guilty, innocent till proven guilty. I do believe in that. And if something happens there, that could derail the fight. I mean, these are facts. Like, these are all, it's all part of the equation in this sport. And that's simply it.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, we didn't speak much about it at all, but I was more concerned about the other issue, the hit and run stuff that he actually has trials, you know, scheduled for. You know, the other thing was hearsay basically, but it was affecting the fight, and it was actually affecting him mentally because he was posting things saying that, and that was where we were coming from. In terms of, you know, what he does outside of the ring, that's neither here nor there. But if it's going to affect the fight, we're going to talk about it. And I don't know. I could see that. I could see it on both ends from these guys. I'm not saying it's not just solely Tank. Both guys have had trouble outside of the ring, whether it be legal or mental. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it affects if fights happen or not. And that leaves a lot of question marks for me, even with a contract.
So I'm hoping all that obviously goes away, and I'm sure you are too. This is a fight we want to see.
Awesome fight.
Exactly. Let's hope everything. That's the biggest fight in terms of commercial. You know, in a way, Fulton's a big one for the fight fans and the essence of the sport and all that. But Tank, Ryan, those are the type of fights that you need boxing to have to keep it healthy and, you know, to bring mainstream eyeballs to it in a way that YouTube boxing simply can't. Like, this is a real fight, and these are two of the most popular fighters. We've talked about this fight ad nauseum. When it's actually announced and there's, you know, the venue and the official announcement and doing press conferences, we will have an emergency podcast to really get into it. But Ryan's end is signed, and we'll see how this plays out. If there's going to be a rollout next week, I was told too, like Showtime rolls out their full schedule, big presentation. I heard that's coming in the next couple of days too. Big fight. We have a date for this one, Chris. We have a date. We have a venue, Showtime pay-per-view, Caleb Plant, David Benavidez. Holy shit. Great fight. 168 pounders. One of the top five fights you can make. Love it. Really good fight at 168. Makes all the sense in the world. These two have been circling each other for a long time. They do not like each other. That's always a great part of the buildup to the fight. Inside the ring, you got the brawling offensive mastermind of David Benavidez versus slick jab move. Newfound power for Caleb Plant. Lot at on the line this fight. A winner gets right back into the Canelo Stakes. I'm just happy to see we have a date for it, and I'm happy that it's somewhat soon, March 25th. Plant Benavidez.
Love this fight. So another fight that we've been talking about a lot. Hey, now Dan, you're pretty good at this. You're putting this in order of how excited we are about the matchups.
I know how to plan
a show. I see what you're doing here. I like that. But yeah, this is one of those fights. And really, I mean, it's the third in the line of these great fights. But that's the thing. These fights are so great. Like, we have been talking till we're blue in the face about Inoue and Fulton, hoping that, and it came out of nowhere. Tank and Brian is just a massive, massive event. But this is a great fight that makes sense. It makes total sense for these guys to be fighting right now. And we rarely see that in boxing. And I'll tell you this fight's going to happen. I'm very optimistic about this fight coming together because both these guys are hungry. Both these guys are hungry. We have a date. Both these guys are working like guys. They're going to go out there. They're reliable. But yeah, I think stylistically, this is such a cool matchup because, I mean, Caleb Plant is got great legs, great jab, super slick, and has all the skills in the world to win this fight, and you're going to need him in order to beat Benavidez. But Benavidez is just such a beast. He is chaos in the ring. He's coming forward. He throws tons of punches. You're the numbers guy. You'll go over that, I'm sure.
I got plenty of
them. He's got power. He's durable. He takes a punch really well. And his conditioning is off the charts. So, I mean, this is just an awesome, awesome fight. And it's one of those ones it's a can't-miss good fight.
Yeah, Benavidez lands 38% of his total punches. That's number one in boxing. Number one. He's the most accurate puncher.
Wow.
Ranks number three in power connect rate, 46.3. That's number three. It's only behind Tank and Lomachenko. He's number four in punches landed per round. He's top five in jabs landed per round. Those are all the punches you can possibly throw in a fight. The thing with Benavidez is, I mean, if we had more metrics, he'd probably be at the top of it. But the thing with Benavidez is he has these numbers and they're very impressive and you can only fight who's in front of you. But it's just like the level of competition that he's fought. It's not been up to some of the other names on these lists and it lacks a little depth and that's going to change though. Now when he fights Caleb Plant, it's going to be the best opponent that Benavidez has ever faced for Plant. I mean, he's faced Canelo, doesn't get any better than that. Top 5 pound for pound guy. The new power of Plant is a new wrinkle, to this fight, obviously knocking Durrell out, arguably knockout of the year. You have Benavidez side of the camp, you know, kind of floating out PED stuff. You know, Breadman Edwards, who's now the trainer of Plant, had to dispel that. That's always like I feel like that could be like a compliment, right? It's like, oh, you can't, like, you're knocking guys out now, you must be on PEDs, Caleb. Like, I hate when they bring that shit up, because that's like Javonta Davis was doing that with Ryan Garcia, too.
Yeah, I mean, it happened to me, too, when I was undefeated, and I never got tired. So it was like, guys, got to be on PEDs. And I got asked that a lot. I know a couple of my opponents had brought that up early on. But yeah,
on PEDs, you're on avocado, bro.
That's right. I'm on perfect nutrition and lots of sleep. I think Plant. I don't know if it's newfound power. Yeah, Durrell's been durable in the past, but Durrell was 38 years old. It's different.
Perfect
you
know, shot.
He wasn't. Dude. Yeah, perfect shot. It only takes one punch in this sport, no matter who you are. And it was a beautiful shot. It was a body double left hook, body head, boom. They were throwing at the same time. It was a head-on collision, perfect shot on the chin. And like I said, 38-year-old brains don't take the punches the same way that 28-year-old brains do. So it's just, I don't know. I think if the market's still out on whether Plant is a true boxer puncher now or just a boxer. But, you know, I don't think it's the power is going to be that much, that really play a part in this one as much anyway, in this fight anyway, because he's not going to go power for power with Benavidez. Benavidez just throws so many punches. He just has to box smart. He has to use his legs. Power always matters, but I don't know. I don't think it's going to be that type of fight.
Yeah, I can see two things happening here. I can see Plant kind of outboxing Benavidez and making him miss and kind of making him look foolish in there, which I don't think that's going to be the case, but that's how I see Plant winning. Or Benavidez just like wears him down and just stops him late, similar to the Canelo Plant fight.
I see both. Those both scenarios, I see them both happening. I see Plant outboxing Benavidez early and looking like he's going to be the new man, and then him starting to fall apart at the seams as Benavidez really turns up the heat, similar to the Canelo fight, and either gets stopped later or loses a decision.
Yeah, Plant has the best defense at 168. Gets hit with the least amount of punches. Benavidez.
I want you to look this up though. Since you're the numbers guy, I want you to look up.
I have to charge you for this.
Plant. Yeah, it's fine. I got my checkbook out. The Plant fights. I want to know how his defense is in the last six rounds versus the first six rounds.
You want to see Plant's output
Everything. His numbers for the last six, you know, irregardless of what he did in the first six.
Right.
Because I've seen him in the, like in the Uzukate fight, for example, he's cruising through. Uzukate looks like he's going to stop him, drops him twice. It's in total control. Uzukate battles back in the end. Plank got hit a lot, was surviving toward the end of the fight. The Canelo fight started out great, was being very, very competitive, fell apart at the seams, and then obviously got stopped late. So that's, I think, the second half of this fight is really where this fight is going to be won or lost.
Yeah, I'll be interested. I'm going to look that up. So now you piqued my interest of seeing, like, if this volume go down, like, does the opponent punch percentage go up? I mean, probably does. I mean, usually the stats, what you see with your eyes is usually the stats will, that's what how it was always intended, right? It was to watch the fight and then look at the stats after, look at the stats as you go as like a guide. But that would not shock me if the numbers backed up. What we've seen from Plant is it's just running out of steam, or that, you know, defense can't hold up. Like, his power can't keep guys off of him. That's what happened with Canelo. Like, I don't think Canelo respected anything that Plant was throwing his way. But Plant was fresh for the first six rounds, and he was moving around there, and his style was a little tricky for Canelo, and then Canelo just started hammering away. I mean, we'll see if Benavidez can do the same thing, and that's what makes this fight really fun. Not only that, the buildup is going to be crazy. Like, Plant gets like crazy numbers. Like, anytime you put Plant, like, he's got a big following. Even like the digging of the grave thing, which I thought was stupid, it like blew up on like everywhere. It had like 12 million views on Twitter, and he draws. Like, he's a ticket seller, and he's also a you know, people tune in for his fights. That Canelo fight did big numbers, so I think this will be a big one for Showtime. That's good. We need big numbers and big viewers. But that
he's always got drama around him. So like, even with the Canelo fight, like, they got into that scuffle at the press conference, and he got slapped and broke his glasses and cut his face. Like, you know, Plant's got a cloud of drama around him, and people love that, especially in the social media world.
He knows how to sell a fight too. Like, I remember I went to I think it was like a Pacquiao Thurman press conference, and Plant was fighting Mike Lee, the Subway guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that his name, Mike Lee?
Mike,
something like that.
I think it is Mike Lee. Mike Lee, nice guy.
Yeah, I know.
Not a great fighter.
Very nice.
Not a great boxer.
Well, very like made the most of his situation. You know, Subway guy somehow got a fight on regular Fox against Caleb Plant. But Caleb Plant went up there and he delivered like this like promo that was straight out of WWE. That like I was like, damn, like this guy can talk. Like he has a lot of like self confidence and a lot of self belief. And I think that comes from like where he grew up and like. Grew up with pretty much nothing, like Tennessee, like, you know, like had a really rough, I think lost his mother, lost his daughter, been through some stuff, probably doubted a lot along the way as a white guy in boxing, I'm sure you can attest to as well. So he's got like that chip on his shoulder, which I like. Rubs some people the wrong way, but I mean, that sells in boxing. Like, you either tune in to watch him get knocked out like with Canelo, you're gonna tune in and see him overcome and defy the odds. I love that. That's it. That's all I gotta say about that. First half, Chris, of boxing. Fury Usyk, looking like that's gonna happen. Wilder Ruiz, which they have Wilder's camp saying that Ruiz is next. Like, that's gonna happen. Tank Ryan, we just talked about, you know, penciling that one in. Haney Loma, May 20th. Reported that last week. Happening. Plant Benavidez. Happening. Inoue Fulton. Happening. That right there is a massive first half of 2023. Massive. Those are big, meaningful fights with names that fans want to see, matchups that fans want to see, good betting odds on these fights. No real massive one-sided fights here. Like, that right there is what can get boxing fans excited. That right there can make the upcoming February boxing schedule, if not looking great, it could hold us over, because we know down the line we're seeing mega fights.
Yeah, I'll take a month off if I got all that shrink. Because listen, we had a lot of good fights, a lot of good weekends. That's exhausting. We, you know, especially guys like us, man. We got to cover it day to day, a couple times a week, and also we're fans on top of people who work in this industry. So it's we get it, we get racked over the coals when there's a lot of good fights. So we'll take February to get in shape, right? We'll be training.
February, start booking some guests. Wanna do some guest interviews?
We always do guest interviews. We haven't done that yet. Bring our friends on.
Yeah, we haven't done that yet. We haven't got someone on the show where we're both grilling them. I think that would be kind of cool. February, we'll get creative. There are some fights in February, Lara and Wood, the all women's card February 4th. There are some good ones, but it doesn't.
Those are good fights.
Right. Those are, we'll definitely talk about them. We'll definitely preview them, but you know, I do want to bring the best possible show, every single week. So there are some good fights coming up. We want to talk about Edgar Berlanga, Top Rank.
Yeah.
Have parted ways.
My boy.
This was something like we kind of could like didn't hear any rumblings about, but could kind of see coming. Interesting because there was a mutual party. Usually you see, you know, lawyers get involved, litigation, holdouts. You've been there. Some of the biggest names in boxing have all, you know, had legal issues with their promoter and whatnot. But no, not with this one. I'm officially a promotional free agent, Berlanga said in a statement to ESPN. I want to thank Top Rank, Bob Arum, ESPN, for the last few years. I'm excited for the future. We'll be waiting for my manager to tell me what the next move is. I've sold out the theater at the Garden. I've set a goal for myself to sell out the big room at MSG and throw the biggest party at the Garden that Puerto Rican fans have ever seen. I cannot wait for the future.
Yeah, I mean, Edgar's a friend of mine. I've trained with him in the gym for many, many years. You know, we could see it. You know, there weren't any grumblings. There wasn't like a lot going on. This was handled very, very professionally from both sides, which I'm not surprised. Top Rank is very professional in the way they handle things. And Keith Connolly, also my manager, who handles Berlanga and his career, figured it out. And, you know, they part ways. Question is, where does he go now?
I think Matchroom USA.
Makes sense. You know, that makes sense. He still has the Puerto Rican star power. He can still sell out, especially in New York. You know, he's got that great record in those knockouts, although he has been knocking people out lately. And but we got to see where he goes from here, because once the competition stepped up with Berlanga, those fights changed dramatically. They went from first-round blowouts. I think he had – so how many did he have in a row? 16, 17?
17. It became his thing.
Something.
The knockout streak became – it was a blessing and a curse for him. Blessing because
I think it was a curse. It's actually a curse.
Blessing, obviously, if it could do a pie chart, it would be like 70% curse, 30% blessing at first.
Yeah.
The beginning of it was like this guy was fighting on regular ESPN. They're comparing him to Mike Tyson with this knockout streak. It was captivating, like non-boxing fans. I had my friends hit me up, yo, who is this Berlanga guy? This guy's the truth. You know, he's knocking guys out like Mike Tyson in the first round. That's great because you're going to have to find a way to get noticed in this sport. But it got too much. Like it became like kind of defined who he was. And it's not, you can't live up to one round knockout. You can't possibly only go down from there. And once they started matching him, I think it was Damon Nicholson who we saw him fight recently. Andre, like not a world beater by any means, like got knocked down 5 times, but did go the 10 round distance. And then he had that fight, the last one where he bit the guy. And he's had like these performances where you don't see a second gear. Like you don't see adjustments. And I think his name got a little bit bigger than his talent. And he enjoys the limelight. He enjoys, you see him with Fat Joe. You see him with Tracy Morgan. He enjoys that life. And that's fine. That's part of the sport and part of fame and being a boxer. But sometimes it can be too much. And sometimes it could give you false hope or false, what's the word I'm looking for? He thought of himself as a superstar when he was not there yet. And that's very dangerous in the sport. Top Rank was in a position where they wanted to match him in tough. They couldn't really find anyone for him to fight. He probably wanted to slow down a little bit. Top Rank wants to move him up. Not only that, Top Rank has a slew of really good prospects now. Like when they signed Berlanga, they didn't have like all these guys that they have now. Like Berlanga was and Zayas.
I remember when they were going through when they were getting ready to sign him. I remember I worked for Top Rank regularly. I remember the message. They're like, "Is this kid for real? Like, can he really punch like that?" I'm like, "No, he's for real. He trains hard." And then the question became, "What's going to happen after the first round?" I'm like, "Oh, I see him in the gym. He spars a ton. Like, he gets his rounds in. I think he'll be fine." There was a lot of questions around him, you know, from all sides. So, and I think there still is. You know, but like you said, once you start seeing these young guys hanging out with celebrities, going out to parties, he's not even 25 years old yet. You're not a world champion. You haven't earned the confidence that you're exuding yet. There are guys out there who can really fight. I mean, really dangerous guys that you have never heard of that can come from anywhere. They can have 5, 6, 7 losses. You got that guy. He's out there. And you're out here in the club. He's out there in a favela somewhere training to beat you. It's no way to live when you're a prospect. These kids, these, you know, sub-25s who are hanging out, drinking, getting heavy in between fights, getting seen with Fat Joe, going out with so-and-so celebrity. No good. No good. That is a death sentence for a young fighter. You've got to be disciplined. You've got to get there. It's a different thing when you're the man. But when you think you're the man too early, or when social media tells you you're the man,
yeah,
that's a recipe for disaster.
It was all the above. It was like the knockout streak, the fame, the notoriety, famous on social people, media, famous people media, hanging on, latching on to him. You know, calling out Canelo, saying I'll fight Canelo. You know, it was selling tickets. Like, definitely did sell out the theater. I was there for many of them, and it was a raucous crowd. But then the fight would come, and he wouldn't get that early knockout, and then he wouldn't cut off the ring, and he would get tagged a bunch by the Steve Rolls. He would get tagged a bunch, and then all of a sudden,
he got dropped by Closeros when he blew out his bicep.
And that's when you're saying, like, all right, you can sell a ticket, but if you're going to sell those tickets, you got to give the fans a performance. Like, Felix Trinidad sold a lot of tickets, but he gave you a lot of knockouts. Miguel Cotto sold out the Garden numerous times, Puerto Rican Day Parade weekend, and gave you legendary performances. Like,
awesome fights.
It's two levels of it. Sell tickets, give us performances. Like, I don't know. Like, if you don't have the performances, you don't have the sell tickets. What's that?
Felix Trinidad's another one. Felix Trinidad is another one. The guy had almost no personality, but his fights were incredible, right? All of them. And he knocked people out. He got out there. He would get dropped. He'd roar back. You know, you don't need to be the outside. People want to see fighting. People want to see the good fight. Cool, your walkout was great. Cool, you're on social media. You're taking pictures and popping bottles with whoever. You got to fight, dude. That's what we're talking here. This is boxing.
Yeah. So I think Matchroom, I think, would be the logical stop for him. Keith Connolly, your manager, has a pretty good ties with Matchroom. A lot of his fighters fight there with Eddie Hearn and on DAZN. I could see Matchroom USA. They need American stars. Names. I don't even know what, like, names. He's a name. They need, yep, American names. And they do these American these cards, and they're doing less and less of them. Put Berlanga on one of them. See what he's got. If he can still turn it around, because he is only 25 and does have really good punching power. If you can turn it around, they can find big fights for him. Like, Jaime Munguia is out there. I'd have Diego Pacheco. I wouldn't put him anywhere near Edgar Berlanga. But that Pacheco is like, what? He's even like 21. He's really young. But
he's one of my favorite prospects today.
But they can find someone in 168 Matchroom, and then they could kind of like rebuild him and see what they can maybe cash out and see what he can get. And I'm sure Eddie and Matchroom want to do a big Puerto Rican day fight there too. Another thing with Berlanga is, I thought that, like, maybe his ego was getting in the way too. Like, I think Xander Zayas outgrew him in skill, career development, and like fanfare. Like, but the last fight I was at, the Teofimo one, the crowd went crazy for Xander Zayas. Like, the biggest pop of the night came for him. He's the one that's going to be headlining. As much as Berlanga can say that he wants to do all that, like, Zayas is the guy that they're going to, top rank is going to build around. Maybe they said that, or they saw the writing on the wall, Berlanga's team, and was like, let's go somewhere else. Let's go to top rank, or excuse me, Matchroom, where, you know, I could be the guy there, where at top rank, he's probably down the lower on the list of prospects, you know, Keyshawn Davis, Bruce Carrington, Jared Anderson, the heavyweight they have that we always talk about, the guy that was in the Olympics. Why am I blanking?
Oh, yeah.
Looks like Ravishing Rick Rude.
Yeah, yeah. He had that killer knockout.
Richard Torres.
Torres, yeah.
Right. They have they're at a different place now, Topic. When they had Berlanga, they was just pretty much him and Zayas that they were building around, and a few other guys. But the prospects now have outgrown Berlanga, and he's not a priority as much for top rank. Finally, we got a big fight this weekend in the middleweight division. Liam Smith, Chris Eubank. Love that it's going to be on regular DAZN. It's not a Matchroom card. This is a Boxer card. Boxer usually works with Sky Sports. Sky Sports, I guess, is letting it on DAZN so us Americans can watch it with our subscription. Love that. I'll be tuned in Saturday afternoon before the Giants play the Eagles. Eubank minus 250 favorite, Chris. We know about Chris Eubank, supposed to fight Conor Benn. I think he came out smelling like roses after that, handled it well. Clowns Conor Benn every day on social media. Still did it this week, which I love that. Liam Smith's been around forever. Fought Canelo, has a little bit of a career resurgence. Three straight stoppage wins. Wasn't really known as a stoppage guy. This is it for both guys. I feel like Eubank should win. Like, but I feel like it's almost like a crossroads fight where whoever loses, we're not going to be seeing them in main events. Eubank can't afford to lose this fight because I would not be shocked if he fights Conor Benn again because there's just too much money around it. And there's that will happen. That's a whole other story for another day. Liam Smith loses. His days are probably over as a main eventer. If he wins, that's a big, big giant win for Eubank. How do you see this fight playing out? It's a tough one to pick like a definite winner.
Yeah, I think like when it pops in your head, you're like, oh, of course, Eubank should win that fight, like you said, right. Plus 250 favorite. But I think that's more because of just of his presence in the media recently and like how he's talked himself up into being, you know, this amazing fighter. And
his mind games are amazing.
Yeah, they're great. He's a great talker. His social media is very strong. Liam Smith is a chop, and I'm going to cook him. You know, like it's good. It's his face to face stuff is fantastic. He's a great.
Bro, did you see what they were saying today or as we record this?
No, I don't know.
Dude, their press conference got out of control. Like Sky Sports had to issue an apology. Liam Smith pretty much intimated that Chris Eubank was gay. He said,
oh, wow.
Yeah, which I think is – I hate when it gets to that. Like there's one thing to talk trash, but get into the personal stuff. Like it just seems desperate. Like they're looking for either an edge mentally or promotional-wise.
Well, because he couldn't keep up with the trash talk from Eubank.
Right. So he's just like, oh, you – for someone that talks about women a lot, this is what Liam Smith said. Never seen you with one. Anything you want to tell us? And Chris Eubank was like, oh, yeah, well, I heard you cheat on your wife. I'd rather be gay than be a cheater.
Oh, boy.
I'm like, that's what ugly. Is going on here? This is what we're coming to?
Yeah.
That's what I hate that about promotion sometimes. I hate when like race comes involved. I hate when politics get involved. And I hate when really personal attacks become involved. Yeah, it's fun for like people to talk about. And oh, now this might give you another chance to reason to tune in. But it's embarrassing all around. You know, Sky Sports issuing an apology. The head, like, you know, the Michael Benson guy who aggregates all the boxing news, the quotes were insane, like just like what
I never got into that stuff, and that's the reason why, because it's just, you know, I'm gonna say something and you can't keep up with the things I'm saying, and now you're gonna talk about my mom or my girl or my, you know, whatever. It's disgusting. It's this is supposed to be a gentleman's sport. I hate when that shit happens, like you said, but the world we live in now, people love it. We live in trash talking, you know, social media hits and little clips and whatnot, but it is what it is. But let's talk about the actual fight.
we did need to talk about that, though, because that was shocking.
Yeah, let's talk about the actual fight. So I think this fight, actually, stylistically, it's a good matchup. Eubank, since he's been training Roy Jones Jr., he's changed his style quite a bit. He's got kind of that front hand down.
I don't know if he's with Roy for this fight, though.
Oh, interesting. But he's been fighting like Roy his past couple fights, whether – you know, he's with Roy or not. I'm sure some of those caveats are going to be a part of it. He's very athletic. He's explosive. He jumps in from the outside. Similar, you know, Roy Jones-esque. Listen, he's no Roy Jones Jr. I don't think anybody could fight like Roy. I don't think anybody should try and fight like Roy.
Right.
Roy was otherworldly in terms of his vision, his reactions, his judge of range, and his power.
Yeah.
Chris Eubank ain't Roy Jones Jr. But he has employed some of those tactics, the leap and left hooks. He's got a very nice hard jab that he throws from the hip. He dropped Smith with that a few times. Not Smith. Who was that? I always have trouble with this guy's name.
He fought Liam Williams.
Liam Williams.
Well, everyone's named Liam over in the UK, so I understand.
Yeah, exactly. I should have just said Liam, but whatever. Yeah. So
it's like he Joe
here. That hard jab from the hip, which he throws very well, and it's hard to see. But Liam Smith fights very straight up, right?
Yep.
He's got his hands up. He's very solid. We saw him in the Canelo fight, really just walking him down. With Liam Smith, what you see is what you get. He's going to come forward. He's durable. He punches well with both hands. He lets his hands go. He's got decent power. He's got a good chin. So that kind of style can give a guy who's very athletic and unorthodox a lot of trouble. So I think if Eubank is going to go out there and fight with that arm down, throwing those slashy shots and jumping in from the outside, those clean straight punches from Liam Smith could give him a lot of trouble. And yeah. I think he's big enough and strong enough to actually get some respect from Eubank. So I see this being a fight. I think ultimately the difference is going to be the athleticism of Eubank. He's physically strong. He's got good power. He's explosive. And he can just move a little bit better. And like you mentioned, Liam Smith, certainly in the twilight of his career, a loss here could potentially, you said, be in an end of his main event status. Might be the end of his career in general.
He's been around a while. He's
been around for a long time. He's fought some tip-top guys. This is a bit of a grudge match. But if he, you know, if he's still got more in the tank, this could be a real fight. But I'm not so sure he does. So I got Eubank coming out in this fight, probably by decision. I'm gonna go decision for Eubank. Yeah,
I would say take the rounds, whatever the over under is, take the over. I think it's gonna go to a decision.
Yeah,
I agree with a lot of what you said. I'm looking up Chris Eubank's age. Both, well, it's senior. 56 came up. I think Eubank Jr. is 33. No kid.
Yeah, still in his prime.
But he has way better talent than Liam Smith. Like, Liam Smith obviously fought Canelo, but after that, it's not really not. And that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Eubank has a pretty good resume. I think he has a little bit more left in the tank. Throws 63 punches. He definitely has a resurgence. Around. What?
At least he definitely has had a resurgence, you know, at least motivationally recently.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. The Ben thing kind of really put him in the spotlight even more. Like we said, came out really looking smart and handled that really well. And I think if he had some fans on the fence about what they thought about him, I think he made a lot of fans with the Conor Ben situation. But in the
ring, won me over. I thought Ben was going to win that fight. We were talking about that. I liked Ben in that fight. Now it's like you said, if you're on the fence on Eubank, man, he showed out and showed that he can talk the talk and potentially walk the walk.
I think, yeah, I think Eubank, he should win this one, and props to him for pivoting from the Ben fight to take on somewhat of a tough test. Like, he could have, but he's at that age, 33, where he's got to fight in big fights. Like, what is this guy? Like, what is Eubank? Is he a world title contender at 160? He was on that path in like 2019 when he beat Karabov, and that was like in the US, and that was like that Karabov got hurt, and Showtime brought him over to the States because they were looking to match up Eubank with Charlo, which could still happen because Jermall Charlo is the middleweight champion. The division is an absolute joke. Golovkin is one of the champions. Charlo has the belt. Janibek has the other belt. It's a dumpster fire. Eubank could put himself into there somehow. Like, he's got a name, and if he knocks out Smith or he has a really good performance, you know they're going to be pushing for him to either try to get in the title contention or go back to the money fight with Conor Ben. Because do we really want to get? I think the Ben fight will happen.
I do too. I think you know, Eddie's angling for that right now. So I see that fight happen. We said that almost from the beginning. Like, once this all gets cleared, because it will. This is boxing. It's nothing. Yeah.
The more they talk.
We've been around long enough that we know that these things get swiped under the rug, and then the big fights happen.
Yeah, the more Hearn side and Ben keep talking is because they know that he's probably going to somehow get exonerated through some loophole or something, and they're going to be able to make that fight because it is a big money fight. And Eubank's
in a great spot because he's got that fight and he's got great leverage for the negotiations of that fight. But he also, I mean, you got Triple G around. You know, that's still a very viable money fight. That's a really tough fight for Triple G to take on, I think. But it's a good fight. I mean, it's not the Charlo brothers fighting Triple G, but I don't know. I could see it.
I would love to see it. I just don't know what Golovkin. Getting into the mindset of Golovkin is a really hard thing to figure out because I don't know. I mean, he just fought Canelo, made a boatload of money. Like, he could easily retire. He could look for another big, massive payday with someone else. I don't think Eubank gives him like a massive, massive payday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's really hard to figure out the middleweight division, but this will be a fun fight, somewhat of a 50-50 fight. I shade Eubank. I like the rounds. Don't know if I would touch Eubank on the money line, but it should be fun. I think Joseph Parker's on the card too, heavyweight. He's coming off that Joe Joyce Got his ass handed to him. That was a tough, tough fight.
Surprising for me.
That he's coming back, right?
No, well, surprising that he got his ass kicked the way you just said.
I don't really like that I said that. I don't really like that I said that. Why did I say that? Ass handed? I don't like that. I'm sorry. I apologize on the spot.
Yeah, I was surprised that he lost to Joyce the way he did. But yeah, coming back as fast as he is, especially as a heavyweight.
That was October.
But I mean, hey, opportunities, go right for it. I like Joseph Parker. He's a good guy. He's a very, very solid heavyweight, especially during that era. He might have missed some of his bigger opportunities, but he's taken them now. Great guy.
Got Joshua, but did lose. He's been in a lot of big fights. He beat Ruiz.
Big fights. Yeah, very, very solid. But his career was a very start and stop, it seemed like, unfortunately. I think when he had his momentum, he didn't really get to string those fights together at the right time.
Yeah.
Was kind of sitting on the outside for a while, and now is getting the calls, maybe a little bit late, but whatever. Go make that money, Joe, and go out there.
Money, player.
Kick some ass, like my partner Dan likes to say.
4 months it's been since the Joyce fight. Usually, you know, get to that 6 month suspension if you have a rough fight. That's interesting.
I don't know. It depends.
That's like a New York State thing.
I fought Pacquiao 5 months after breaking my orbital against Ruslan. So
that's true.
I don't know.
You're built different, though.
Yeah, but we all are. I'm built different amongst different people, but you know, amongst different boxers. But yeah.
All right, fans and friends, a lot to talk about. It was a fun episode. I love talking about big fights. I think that's when the show's at its best. I think that's when boxing's at its best. There are a lot of big fights coming up on the schedule. You got to be a little patient. And once we get to March, and there are some good fights in February, but things are really going to pick up, and you know where to find the best analysis every single week. It's right here on Inside Boxing Live. I appreciate everyone for tuning in. As always, remember to protect yourselves at all times. Keep your hands up. Stay out of those DMs.